Speaking of Democrat on Democrat battles, yesterday was the one and only not quite debate of California's Senate race. So let's pick up with that as we move on to stuff that matters. That debate yesterday at the Public Policy Institute of California put incumbent Senator Dianne Feinstein on the stage with former state Senate President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon in a format in which they were not allowed to address each other directly, spoke to an extremely small and sedate crowd, and never raised their voices once. There was very little on display by way of policy contrasts. The only point I was able to identify was on what an ideal healthcare system might look like. Let's start with Senator Dianne Feinstein.
I believe there should be a public option and that the government should have an option that people can opt into if they want.
That is Obama campaign talking points circa 2008. Here is Kevin DeLeon.
I believe in Medicare for all, not Medicare for some. I don't believe that healthcare coverage should be exclusive to the wealthy or the elite.
Bernie Sanders campaign talking points circa 2016. Medicare for all, of course, is code for single-payer healthcare in modern political parlance. Joining us to go through the debate and what is to be learned from it, we have on the phone line Sherry Bevich-Jeffy, professor of the practice of public policy communication at the University of Southern California. Thanks for taking the time this morning.
You're welcome. Good morning, Brian.
Any massive revelations from yesterday's debate?
No. Not really. Here's what I thought was interesting. Well, first of all, let me say this. I don't think it helped De Leon. I don't think it hurt Dianne Feinstein. I think you certainly outlined why. It was a very small audience, no radio, no television. It was live streamed, but it's not going to get De Leon known. It simply is not. He managed very well to seem deliberative, and people worry a bit that he's sort of a flamethrower and a child of the Bernie-crats, and he kind of belied that, but I thought it was interesting that he kept referring to Dianne Feinstein as, quote, our senior senator, end quote. You could take it one way or another. And I thought it was interesting that Senator Feinstein kept referring to the former president pro tem of the state Senate as Kevin, and as though he were somewhat of a child. There it is. He's going to focus on age, out of touchness, if you will, and I think she will focus on inexperience, and that will be the referendum in that campaign. Go ahead.
It also seemed to come down to a question of style, basically.
Yeah, that's
him saying, I'm going to fight harder if mm-hmm. I go to Washington, saying we have to bring California values to Washington, not Washington values to California. I want to play you a couple cuts from, this takes a big asterisk, what was probably the most heated exchange of the debate right at the end. Let's start with Kevin DeLeon.
We have folks in Washington, D.C. that have lacked the courage of their convictions to do the right thing by everyday folks. I wish Democrats in Washington would fight like hell for dreamers, just the way Donald J. Trump and the Republicans fight like hell for their stupid wall. I wish I could see that in Washington, D.C. That lack of courage, always backpedaling every single time, is not the type of leadership that we need today.
Always backpedaling every single time. Again, he wasn't allowed to address Dianne Feinstein directly, but that did seem to be subtextually directed at her. Her response, yeah. Her response is, what do you want? Republicans control everything. Here she is.
There is a lock on power in Washington. The executive is controlled by one party, the House is controlled by the same party, and the Senate is controlled by the same party. When you have both houses and the White House controlled by one party, it is extraordinarily difficult. I call it a lock on power. If you can break that lock open and create a majority of the opposition party, which is the Democratic Party, in one of these houses, you break that dynamic. And that's what I hope will happen on this election day.
I actually didn't fully follow what she was saying there. Is it like, if Democrats get the House, then someone in her position can fight harder?
Well, first of all, she's right. You know, there is no break on the Republican Party in Washington today. It does control the presidency and both houses of Congress. And that is realistic. And what she was saying, I thought, was that if Democrats take control of at least one house, there will be something of a break on Republican power. You can also interpret that as meaning Democrats could make Donald Trump's life pure hell, because they would control, even if it were only one house, and likely if it is only one house and it's looking that way, it would be the U.S. House of Representatives. Democrats would then control all of the committees. Democrats could then launch investigation after investigation. Democrats could look at the possibility of impeachment. And I think the subtext may well have been, and you're not going to know this unless you're listening, unless you've watched the way Dianne Feinstein has worked over the years, but what she is saying is she works across the aisle, across the Capitol, if you will, and she, as well as all others who are Democrats, will be involved. In fact, you know, that brings up one thing I observed. In his responses, Kevin DeLeon appeared to be me, me, me. I led, I did, I was, I led, I did, I was. Feinstein, on the other hand, was basically Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. Get Democrats in Washington. Get people who know what they're doing. Get people who are experienced. And you know what? In my observation of this election cycle, it appears to me that this is an election that is not so much or primarily about issues. It is about style. It is about personality. It is not so much about experience. It is about trust. So she, you know, it will be a referendum, I think, on is this going to be another election in which whether or not we want to have a beer with the candidate is more important than command of policy issues and policy details.
I was interested that Kevin DeLeon seemed to pass on a couple opportunities to draw a sharp contrast. At least in my stomping grounds up here in Peacenik, Northern California, Senator Feinstein frequently draws criticism for being too supportive of military spending requests, of foreign military interventions, and too supportive of the U.S. intelligence services generally. She got a question on that where she, you know, gave a not terribly specific answer, and he didn't even ask for an opportunity to speak to the same issue.
Well, yeah, that was one time, and she also sort of dodged the bullet, and I'm looking at my notes because I took note of that, and she just sat back and let and just took it. It was an awkward format, I thought. Obviously, it was not a debate. It was billed as a conversation, and I got the feeling that neither candidate really knew how far they could go, how far they should go. And I think that is one area in which they both were a little tender, if you will.
Can we talk about what the race says about the larger contours of power in California? Kevin DeLeon mm-hmm. locked up the state Democratic Party's endorsement, mm-hmm. Locked up most of the major labor endorsements in mm-hmm. the state of California. Dianne Feinstein's basically running on her name recognition as an incumbent, and so far that's kept her ahead by double-digit margins. Go ahead.
You're assuming that's the only reason she's ahead.
Sure.
We don't know that. I mean, you know, it may well be, although it's very interesting, there's a USC LA Times poll out today which shows that Republicans favor DeLeon for Senate, which is really interesting, because what I was about to say is, you know, we don't know whether or not independents and Republicans feel more comfortable with Dianne Feinstein than with De Leon, who is far more to the left than she is. I don't know. I think, you know, I have always felt that Republicans in particular might well support De Leon just out of the need to send a message to Feinstein. And because so little is known about him and so much is known about Feinstein, so maybe it's better the devil you don't know than the devil you do know. Why? Maybe you're getting it up there, and I'd love to know. But down here, we're really not getting much media, period, about the Senate campaign. We're being overwhelmed with congressional ads. We're being overwhelmed with proposition ads. Why isn't the Feinstein campaign, I'm talking political reality here, trashing De Leon among Republicans, among independents who may well tend to be more on, and let me say among moderate Republicans, for his very liberal stances. Maybe she is. Maybe she's doing it under the radar, but it doesn't look like it down here.
If anything, over the course of the challenge by Kevin De Leon, she seems to have moved her politics to the left.
A little bit. You're right about that. But, you know, whether it's good news or bad news for Feinstein, a little bit to the left still makes her more moderate than Kevin De Leon. And that, I think, kind of ties in with what we've been discussing. So what? It's not about, I mean, for the strong progressive wing of the Democratic Party, ideology is key. Not so much for Republicans, moderate people who don't know very much about one candidate, De Leon, and a whole lot about the other, Dianne Feinstein. They're looking at style. They're looking at the fact that, particularly in the case of many Republicans, they don't want Dianne Feinstein. They know where she stands. You know, it's a crazy election season is all I can say. She's still ahead by double digits, but I will tell you, I learned long before 2016 never to say never in politics, and 2016 sure underscored that.
Sherry Babbitt, Jeffy, they were so hands-off with each other. I got it coming from Dianne Feinstein. Mm-hmm. As far as we can tell from polls, she has a comfortable lead. The last thing she wants to do is blow it by looking like she's attacking a young up-and-coming Latino in the Democratic Party.
Exactly.
Kevin De Leon, one of my colleagues here in the news department, said it almost seems like he's auditioning for whatever job he's going to get when the campaign flops.
Yes, I think that's a very perceptive observation. He may well be establishing his name recognition. He may well be painting a picture of himself for a future campaign. The speculation down here is that he could run for L.A. City Council in 2020. He might run for mayor of Los Angeles. I believe that'll be up in 2022. There are a lot, and he may run for statewide office in the next statewide election. There are a lot of alternatives for De Leon if he doesn't botch this one. And, you know, one point I really, really, really want to make, and I've been making it and making it and making it, that every election always comes down to turnout. Not the polls, not anything else, but getting those voters out. And if the Bernie-crat wing of the Democratic Party, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, is really riled up, really energized, and comes out in droves, all bets are off.
We're speaking to Sherry Bebich-Jeffy, professor of the practice of public policy communication at the University of Southern California. And we've been dissecting yesterday's one and only not quite debate between Kevin DeLeon and Dianne Feinstein for the California Senate seat that is up this year. But if you have a minute, Sherry, I would like to run through some of the swing congressional districts that are being contested,
sure,
because they are mostly in your backyard in California, not in
mine. Five of the seven that have been targeted are Southern California districts.
So let's start with the seat that's being vacated by Daryl Issa, the 49th Congressional mm-hmm. District. What's going on there?
Well, obviously, it is an open seat because Daryl Issa has, he decided it was just too much to take, I think. He was hassled within his own constituency. And right now, it looks like this is the seat that is most likely to flip from Republican to Democrat. The Cook Political Report, this is, by the way, kind of a San Diego-ish, Orange County-ish kind of seat, but it, the Cook Political Report has it leaning Democratic. It is one of the competitive seats. It is one of the targeted seats. The LA Times has it lean Democratic. It's Mike Levin, a Democrat, against Dianne Harkey, a member of the Board of Equalization, the Republican. Let me put it this way, however, it is not impossible that if, and I assume we're going to be discussing this next, it is not impossible that if Dana Rohrabacher in a neighboring district is defeated by a Democrat, and it's not impossible that he won't be defeated by a Democrat. There is apparently some speculation that Daryl Issa, who exited this district because demography has moved toward the Democratic registration and toward a Latino power district, that Issa may run the next time around if the Democrat wins in the 48th district, Rohrabacher, for that seat. It's really fun.
You mean Issa might just pick up stakes and move over the district line?
You betcha. And you know, in Congress, you don't have to. There is no real residence requirement.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just seems like such a ignominious retreat from politics for a figure who's been so central to the Republican resurgence. I mean, ISIS, what, he single-handedly financed the recall of Democratic
yep.
Governor Gray Davis in 2004.
You're right. I had forgotten to mention that. You're absolutely right.
I mean, he took the lead on a whole lot of fire-breathing Republican oversight investigations during the Obama years. To see him just kind of pull himself out of the running felt like a real pivotal moment. But if he gets revived in the adjoining 48th Congressional District, that makes a lot more sense. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing of it. He left, I think, because it was just... Well, he had lost his chairmanship because of term limits. He was being hassled like hell by his own constituents. Why take it? And he walked. I mean, there are those people who just simply don't want to put up with what is now the current political environment for one reason or another. And he seemed to be one of those entitled incumbents who said, "Pa, I don't have to take this." But I have never known a politician. Well, that's not true, but most politicians don't like it in the private sector, don't like the change in the dynamic, don't like the change in the relationship with reality, if you will. And they generally look again to getting involved in the public sector, to getting involved in elective office. And that's what I think. If it's there, why not go for it? And we don't know whether or not Issa will go for it, and we don't know whether or not he's going to have to go for it if Rohrabacher pulls out a win. It looks like the 48th looks like a toss-up now. And the money is going to the Democrat, Harley Rauda. Dana Rohrabacher, the Republican, is flailing. It didn't help him to be labeled Putin's favorite member of Congress. And the ads that we're seeing down here, and by the way, we are seeing ads for in L.A., for Congress people in Orange County because those seats are so critical. But the ads are pinning him to his, shall we say, coziness with Putin and Russia.
And does that actually hurt him with Republican voters?
Some. Yeah, some. Some, you know. The Trumpians, I would expect, would... It wouldn't hurt him because it sort of mirrors the stance of the president. But in California, there are far fewer Trumpians than there are probably almost anywhere. And so there will be those. And the independents, do not forget the independents. They are now the second party in California, statewide. The Republican Party is now the third party by a little bit, by about 2 percentage points, but nonetheless, that's pretty amazing if you think about it.
It is the largest minor party in the Golden State. Sherry Babbitt-Jeffy, that's all the time we have. Thanks so much for talking to us.
My pleasure.
Sherry Babbitt-Jeffy is professor of the practice of public policy communication at the University of Southern California.